two are up, you know, thousands of miles high, you won't have that problem because you won't have the rarefied air that tends to slow down the International Space Station. But you do on you know, at 250 miles up, you know, I mean, it's almost like a perfect vacuum, but it's not. There's rarefied air there slowing things down. So every now and then, you need to reboost the space station. And when I say boost, you know, you don't just push it up. You know, you just accelerate it. And you do a couple of burns, and that will circularize the orbit to a higher elevation. So we kind of not quite need each other, Frank. You know what I mean? And then you have to think in the future, too, in 2030. You know, that's when the Biden administration has just extended the ISS. The latest numbers were 2028. Now we're back up to 2030. But sooner or later, they're going to have to decommission this thing. And at that point, different things might happen. NASA might, would eventually probably deorbit its modules, as well as the modules from Japan, the Kaibo module, or the the Columbus module from the European Space Agency. I mean, these things will probably eventually deorbit, but the front end of it by that time, we'll have at least three more modules attached to it by a company called Axiom. So they want to eventually separate from the International Space Station and have this private company float off and become their own space station. And same with the Russians. You know, they have their modules. They have the Zvezda, Zarya module, and, you know, and on their end. And then now coming out of the bottom, which is the Nadia port going down toward Earth, they just installed this new Nika module, the one that they brought up last November, and then another one attached to it called the Prinkle, and that's like a docking module. You could actually add other modules to it. They're talking about eventually separating from the ISS, and they want to keep their modules for a future space station. So I guess, you know, that's the information I have, but I don't have a final answer, and you could, like, guess, like me. Back to you, Frank. Any other comments? WS2N.
Yeah, very good. I actually think that probably one of the greatest contributors to world peace in that respect is the space program, since both sides need it for national prestige, and neither side wants to disrupt it. So maybe that's yet another thing, aside from the fact that they're both nuclear powers, that will lead both sides to cool it and stay out of direct conflict. That, in my view, is one of the best parts of the space program. The other interesting question is as much legal as political, is whether Elon Musk is actually going to be allowed to launch from Starbase Texas, or whether he's going to have to move that whole operation to KSC. It seems to me like they're starting to build out a spaceport for themselves at Kennedy Space Center in that eventuality. But from what little I got out of his presentation last week was that he still thinks he's going to get approval to fly out of Texas. What do you think? Go ahead.
Yeah. He's kind of all over the place between his new engines. He's got the new Raptor engines. He's trying to build them out, get them operational. He's got his hands full. He's got the two oil rigs that he bought that he eventually would like to convert to launch and landing facilities. Put them out anywhere he wants out in the ocean, 25, 30 miles out. This way it won't bother anybody when he takes off. did hear him. I read what he said about multiple launches in Florida. Eventually, if he does build up the Florida site, you know, he says, well, the people in Florida won't get too upset with one launch every once in a while. But his plans are, well, Elon Musk, his plans are like to launch these things every other day. You know, bring them back, refuel them 6 hours later, you know, and launch them again. This is the way he thinks. I don't see that happening anytime soon. But, you know, multiple launches, you know, if he got good at this, it could become annoying every week or so to have another big launch from Florida. So that's why he's thinking about these oil rigs. And then he said, well, maybe I'll even buy more oil rigs. Let me drop it. And convert them into launch complexes. And yeah, so I read what you heard. I did not see that presentation. I'll have to look for that on his website. I'll find it. But I did read about it, and he has trouble with the FAA trying to get a license to launch the Starship from Boca Chica, Texas. Got the one review, but now the people down there are complaining, and now they want a substantial environmental review as well. So that could take maybe a year. And he just, you know, in his mind, he doesn't have that kind of time. So he's he was already starting to build up Florida already. He's got the two launch facilities now for the. For his two rockets, the Falcon 9 and the Falcon Heavy, they all launch out of they launch out of Launch Complex 40 and Launch Complex 39A. But now he's going to take over a launch complex that doesn't exist that was planned years ago, and it would be called the Launch Complex 49. There was, you know, when the Saturn rockets were built, they were thinking of another launch complex for the Saturn rockets. That's why you have two 39A and 39B, and we launched shuttles from both those launch complexes. But they wanted eventually to have Launch Complex C, and Elon Musk might get involved with that, or Launch Complex 49. Anyway, he's also planning on putting one near, sounds weird, but near the launch complex for the next launch complex for 39A. It's very close. I don't see it doable. He put down concrete a couple of years ago there, getting ready, but now they dug all that up again. I think they're going to rebuild it. I'm not sure what they're going to do. But in any case, if he does that, he could have four launch complexes in Florida alone, one in California, one in Boca Chica, and two platforms, oil platforms. So he's going to have his options, but whether or not this happens, I don't know. I could see him having trouble with the licensing in Boca Chica. So I'm going to go with what he said. Testing in Boca Chica and eventual launches in Florida. Of course, that's going to be delayed. It's going to take time to build up another launch tower and all, everything that he's building down in Texas. He's got to build now in Florida. I'm going to go with that. It's going to be some time before you see these things flying on a regular basis. I think a couple of years. Back to you, Frank.
Paul?
I know, I just see looking at the clock. How you doing, Roy? Back to you.
I'm doing fine. I just wanted to tell you that I think the Echo Link, although it didn't go off, the audio feed went off. And then I think Frank, with the lack of audio getting to him, he tried to transmit to you, and it was a little confusing at one point or another. It seems to be transmitting now, so you might want to ask Frank if he heard it all.
Okay, will do. Thanks, Roy. Frank, did you hear everything, or do you need a repeat?
Yeah, now the Echo Link did drop out, but I don't know that there was anything important enough. Let me just turn off the streaming TV. Is doing something weird here also. I don't know if there's anything important enough that you want to repeat 5 minutes of conversation. Thanks for the offer, though, WB2BXL.
Okay, very good, Frank. Okay, a short version. My guess is he's going to use, like he said, he's going to probably have testing in Boca Chica, and I'm thinking launches from Cape Canaveral in the beginning, and eventually if he starts launching multiple, often, I could see him using these platforms out at sea to launch these vehicles. So, okay, I'm looking at the time. I think we'll start to close down. James Webb Space Telescope's doing good. Pictures that came back of actually one star, but it's 18 pictures because it's 18 different mirrors, so it's like 18 different telescopes looking at the same star, and of course everything's not aligned yet, so that's why these dots are coming down, and it looks like 18 different locations. So they're going to realign them, get them all sensorized. Then after that, have 18 perfect looking stars, in the same form, same position that the mirrors are in. Right now they're kind of like all over the place. They'll be lined up perfectly. And then after that, then they'll start bringing them in. They'll bring the center ones in first, and then eventually bring the outer ones in, and eventually you'll have one little dot, and they'll also refocus everything a little bit too. And then hopefully by May we'll have pictures. I'm going to turn it over to you, Roy. I see the time ticked away. And thank everybody that stood by and listened. 73 Frank, by the way, out there. Thanks for coming back on Echo Link. And we'll be out tomorrow for the Club InfoNet, as well as the Swap and Shop, followed by Newsline. Over to you, Roy. AC2GS, WS2N, for the SpaceNet report for the TechNet.
AC2GS. Well, thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all the help on the technical net, and thank you for all that you do for the club. I'm sure everyone appreciates it. I certainly do. And I want to thank everyone who participated tonight. The usual crew, Wes, Ken, Craig, David, Rocco, Jonathan. I'm sure I'm leaving people out, but just fill in the blanks. I appreciate all the participation, especially tonight was Super Bowl night. The Amateur Radio Emergency Services Net canceled themselves because they'd rather watch the Super Bowl, but I'm glad that people on this net showed up for the tech net here. I want to leave you all with the usual comment that Dick would close his technical nets to be kind to each other. That's good advice any old day. It's particularly good advice these days. COVID is still around. It's still a little bit dangerous out there. Don't think it's all over. Be safe. Be smart. Take care of yourself. Take care of your family. Take care of your friends. And what the hell, even take care of your enemies, because we need everyone. So please, have a safe and easy week, and try to join me next Sunday night when we'll try and do this all over again next Sunday night at 8 p.m. This is AC2GS formally closing the Super Bowl episode of the Technical Net, the Limark Technical Net, and I am clear.
The time is 12:04 a.m. 73. And good night from the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73. And good night from the W2VL repeater. That tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
Copy. N2D, you are listening. Anybody copy?
N2DQI, N2WII. Nothing heard. N2WII clear.
N2DQI listening. N2DQI listening for Mount Vernon, New York. Anybody copy?
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
Here is WB2EAZ listening.
Morning. I just happen to be listening. W8CDL.
Morning, Andy, but let me apologize. I have a dental appliance, and I'm going to the doctor, and I see he wants to see me au naturel, so I left it out. My voice will not sound as good as normal, whatever, however good that is. How are you?
You sounded the same to me. I couldn't tell. I'm good. Yeah, I was going to go into work today, but something came up, so here I am. But I got a doctor's appointment today also. Not a big deal. And that's about it.
Okay, I was on the net last night, causing trouble, didn't hear you. I assume you were busy.
Yeah, I was multitasking. I was listening to the net partially, from on and off. I was watching the Super Bowl, and I was doing some work down in the basement, all at the same time. Well, not really. Well, at the same time when I went upstairs to watch the Super Bowl, on and off. So I was doing three things.
I understand. That makes perfect sense. You don't have to explain it. Now, I made no attempt to watch the Super Bowl at all, so that made my life much easier.
Good morning, good morning. Yeah, I said, Steve, I'll be going into work. It's not happening today, but I got something else that came up I got to do. So, that's what's going on. Yeah, well, I wasn't really rooting for any one particular team, only because it's not a New York team. But I was leaning towards the Bengals more so than the Raiders. The Raiders won. And it was a good game anyway, because, you know, whenever there's a close game, close score, it's just exciting in a way. That's how I look at it. I can feel the excitement, and that's the way I am, so I get into it. Even though whoever wins. Steve?
Hey, good morning to both of you. Just going out for a coffee and maybe head over to do what I was going to do. Yeah, I didn't bother watching either. I'm in Ed's corner.
All right, well, I'm afraid I can't join you for a coffee, Steve. I'm on my way for a periodic checkup, and I'm fasting. Well, when I stop you for coffee, meet you for coffee, I'd be late anyway. Here's my take. I don't mind watching football, but I don't really care about who's in what position, the standings, the point spread. I actually, and this is really weird, I watch football almost like I watch a ballet. I enjoy to watch a well-executed maneuver in football just like I do in ballet. And, but I don't really care, you know, who's winning or anything like that. And last night, I just didn't feel like doing it at all. So I was giving everybody a hard time on the net. Andy?
I'm sneaking out of here. I'll be back in 5. WB2ZSE.
Light wind sugar.
Okay. Very good. Well, I can relate to that. Yeah. You watch the gracefulness of a ballet performer, just like you watch the strategy of the game. And that's what it is, you know. That's what makes it sort of exciting because, you know, you never know who's going to intercept what, where, when, and how, and, you know, and the plays and how they work. But the interesting about the game is the injuries that were created or caused. Odell Beckham, who used to be a Giant, is on the L.A. Raiders, and he was hurt. He hurt his knee. He's had knee trouble before, and he's a good receiver, obviously, you know, in that play that he made many years ago that when he caught a ball one-handed. So when he was hurt and was out of the game, that caused a concern on the team, on the Raiders, because he's a good receiver. But they had managed to pull out the game anyway. And then what's the quarterback, Burrows, is that his name? He was injured, you know, for the for the Bengals. Almost forgetting the name. So he was hurt also. So because of injuries, you don't know what's going to happen. And that's the game also. But, yeah, it's fun to watch. I mean, I like sports in general. I've been watching the Olympics also on and off, and it's fun.
Understand. Now, anyway, on the net last night, Greg OGB had a question having to do with a car's electrical system, you know, battery, alternator, that kind of stuff. And George FIU and I were trying to help him. And Roy confirmed my feeling. It's like the three of us were talking three different languages with no communication whatsoever.
Well, I always I always talk to Roy on the phone, and I kid around with him in regard to I would say the miscreants. We use that term, I guess, on 75 meters. The miscreants that show up on the tech net. Not that it's bad. That's not a bad word anyway. You know, the people that show up and the questions that are asked. I mean, but yeah, the thing is, everybody has their own opinion of something. And that's the way it is, you know. You just whatever, if it's right or wrong, what have you. I was listening, as I said, I was listening to the, you know, to the net partially on and off. So I got some of what was going on. And yeah, I think, in my opinion, Craig doesn't have much of a problem with his car. I think, you know, if he sees a little glitch in a meter reading on a dashboard or something, you know, it could be a concern, but most of the time it's not. There's no issues or anything like that. And as far as a battery going down, if a voltage decreases going to a light bulb, usually the light bulb will dim, not get brighter. I think there was a thing about that. So I've never seen that happen before, where a bulb gets brighter when the voltage goes down. And of course, as far as regulation is concerned, yeah, alternators have built-in regulators. There's no feedback loop, as far as I know. An alternator just produces the voltage to charge the battery. It doesn't sense where what the battery is doing, as far as I know, unless the new alternators have that built in. But I don't think so. I don't think it's a closed-loop system. I think just it's a simple alternator which produces a voltage and is regulated due to the speed of the alternator changing with engine speed. So you have a constant voltage coming out, but I don't think it senses anything, in my opinion. And on it goes. So that's the way it is.
All right. I don't know. It's Craig just seems to like to you know, state the problems. All right, let's see. And there's one other item. It's still Rocco, KG2U something. Let me think. He was talking about hooking up something because his teenage son wants to do something with a flight simulator. And I made a comment. I said, I know a lot of teenagers start playing on these computer flight simulator programs, and the problem is, after a while, they think they're the next Chuck Yeager and have absolutely no clue of just how much there is to flying that these flight simulators do not include.
Yeah, I wasn't listening to that part of the net. I mean, I did hear the guy on, Rocco or Rocky? There's a Rocco and there's a Rocky. I think it's Rocco. Yeah. Well, like you say, you know, this. If you enjoy playing Flight Simulator, I have a friend down in Florida that's really into that. He has a nice program he told me about that I could get from my computer if I wanted to play around. But, you know, I don't have much. It's a little. Take a little bit of extra time to do. All right. Actually, before I do that, let me just unkey for a second.
I'm here. Let me run. W2EZ.
W2EZ. All right, I'll talk to you later. Let you go. Goodbye. WHCDL gets these.
Are you both leaving?
No, I'm just waiting for a phone call. That's why I'm here. But the phone has not rung yet, so, I'm here.
Okay.
I got an interesting email from the company that I work for. Says that your course, it's an online course of... It's called Preventing Discrimination and Sexual Harassment for employees of this company. And they sent me a notice that the deadline is today on the 14th. Actually, Valentine's Day, interestingly enough. So I tried doing the course, but I remembered I already did the course. And I even have the certificate. So, I heard somewhere that they want a refresher course. Anyway, the bottom line is, I can't do it online because it says online, you have already taken the course and have completed it and have gotten your certificate, so there's no need to take it again. So, but they sent me an email stating that I need to take the course again, but I can't even take it because they won't let me. So I gotta call, make a call, let them know. I think they made a mistake.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Does anybody copy?
Here is WB2EAZ listening.
I'm back, WA2CDL. How you doing again?
I'm doing good. So, did I miss anything while I was being pummeled and punctured?
Nope. Nothing at all.
Now, I'm sure you know George, WB2IKT. You better know.
Yes, I do.
George has told me that he feels a little bad. When he was younger, he never really had a chance to spend the time with his son that he really felt his son deserved, and he felt a little guilty about it. Now that he has a grandson, he figured he'd make up. But meanwhile, the grandson isn't playing along. And it tells me one of the things is, as I mentioned this to you a little while ago, is that these kids play on these, you know, computer airplane simulators, and they start to think they're the next Chuck Yeager. And George has regaled me with tales of his son, his grandson's exploits.
Wait, what was the last sentence? We just repeat that.
Anyway, George has told me stories about how his grandson is getting a swelled head because he's learning how to land a simulated airplane on the simulator program of his computer.
Sounds like fun.
No, when, as I've mentioned, people don't realize just how much there is to aviation beyond a simulator.
That's true. Speaking of aviation, have you ever heard of a magazine called Electric Radio?
I do not understand how you go from aviation to Electric Radio. Have I heard of it? Yes. The bad news is, that's about all I can say. I cannot launch into a diatribe about it. I'm aware of its existence, period.
I just happened to be reading an article in a electric radio magazine just before you came back on, dated January 2014. And it shows a picture of a guy, a ham named Don Stanton. It's called WA4JLI. And it says, he's shown with his T-368 station in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. He was an air cadet in the co-pilot seat of a B-17 approaching Pearl Harbor on the morning of December 7th, 1941. He ended up flying T-38s in the Pacific, was captured by the Japanese after crash landing, and escaped to fly again. He has recorded video histories for the Library of Congress and the EAA, Experimental Aircraft Association. He's 96 years old now, and a true American hero. Now, this was back, see, he was 96 back in 2014. He was born in 1921. So, unfortunately, his ham license expired back in, I looked him up on QRZ, back in 2016, his license expired, so he's no longer active, and since he was born in 1921, and it's already 2022, he's over 100 years old. I don't think he's around anymore.
Mathematically possible, but extremely unlikely. I understand the story you told me. It's a wonderful story, but it's not that terribly uncommon. We didn't appreciate it when we were kids. But every one of our fathers really had a story to tell that in most cases they never did tell. And I'll bet this guy didn't tell until fairly late in life. It seemed to be a very common thing, but when you look into it, it's like there are so many stories like that that weren't told until, these people hit 90 years old, and then they started to talk about it.
Yeah, I guess it, for whatever reason, people did that. Maybe they didn't think it was necessary to talk about, or maybe they were embarrassed what happened, or, a number of things. But, yeah. Now, this magazine is good because it talks about the history and all the radios that were on the market back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and so on. That's why I mentioned it, because the fact that this guy was a pilot and he was in Pearl Harbor and he crashed and he crashed his plane ever only to fly again. So that's pretty good. All right, so my tube type, because I'm into tubes, as you know, I like tube radios. My Ico 720 decided to stop transmitting, and I found the problem. Somehow, some way, one of the tubes cracked, developed a hairline crack, and I'm sure you've seen what a tube looks like when it cracks, and it doesn't explode or anything. The glass is all still intact, but the tube becomes white. I guess it's the chemical in the getter. The air going into the tube makes the glass a whitish color on the inside. So as soon as I saw the white, I said, oh, that tube is cracked. And sure enough, no emission at all. The filament is still showing continuity, but it's not lighting. So I replaced the tube, and that was it.
Yeah, I understand and agree 100%. Absolutely. Been there, done that. Yeah, the getter is a little bit of a silvery bit, about the size of your fingernail, typically, on the inside of a glass tube that absorbs, the tiny, tiny bits of air that will eventually leach in. But if you have a crack, it completely overloads, and yeah, it tends to turn white, which is due to a chemical reaction, but it also, as you said, it gives you a visual indication saying, this sucker is toast, and that's exactly where you are. And to tell you the truth, once the getter turns white, it doesn't matter if you have filament continuity or not. It's gone.
Yeah, that's right. So in speaking of air getting in, here's something I have to look into. There are different types of glass manufacturers. Corning is a very famous name. Pyrex is a is a glass that I actually have that's used in heating food. I got a Pyrex, and I guess that's the type of glass that it is. I'm not sure. I don't think it's the manufacturer's name. I think that's the glass. So it's the type of glass that it is. I was asking myself the question: can air get through glass? Is air porous? I guess that's the word I'm going to use. Is glass designed in a way, or some glasses designed that air can actually penetrate and get through the glass, like in a tube? Depending on how they make glass and how it's manufactured and the type of glass that it is.
Here is my take. In general, no. I am sure with the proper laboratory equipment, you might find out something like, molecules per year that you get through. But I think anything through the glass pales in comparison with where the glass goes into the socket, or the pins go through the glass. I think those are far leakier. And while with a properly built tube with a jetter, it'll last for all intents and purposes indefinitely. But I think the weak link is where the pins go through the glass, more so than the glass itself. And by the way, Pyrex is a patented process. It is a glass that has a very low thermal expansion. Because if you take a non-Pyrex piece of glass, heat it up, and drop it into cold water, it will shatter from unequal, thermal expansion contraction. Of course, Pyrex has so little of it. They say it's good to go in and out of the oven. If you get a drop of water on it, it's not going to break.
Yeah, exactly. You refreshed my memory on that, because I remember reading about that. And that's why I have a Pyrex bowl that I use for heating. I put it in the microwave. Yes, exactly. That's a good point. Where the pins go through the glass is where air could leak in over time. So, in fact, I have an electrical engineering book that gives the dielectric constant of glass. I don't know what it is. I don't remember the number. But I know that these on-glass antennas that you could buy, and you're familiar with those, you've seen them for the amateur use. They make them also, I think, for cell phones if you want to connect a... I think, if you want to connect a cell phone radio or for another band. And they were talking about the type of glass that would be more beneficial to be used. I don't know what glass they use in cars. I know that I think they call it tempered proof or tempered. I believe the glass is also shatterproof. It's surrounded by a coating of maybe a plastic or a cellophane or something around it. On the trains, they use the same type of glass. I've seen that. I think it says either tamper-proof or tempered, something like that. I don't know. I don't know which glass they use. But they do have there is a dielectric constant number for a glass or a certain type of glass. Would you agree with that?
I am home. Something just changed with your signal. You're copyable, but it definitely sounds different at the end of the transmission than at the beginning. All right. Tempered glass is treated so when it breaks into little pebbles, not sharp shards. Except through a windshield, car windows, but not the windshield, are tempered glass. So, like, they have a thing, like, if you're stuck in a car that's in water and it shorts out the electric, that there may be an occasion where the best deal might be to smash a window and then it just falls apart into little pebbles. So you don't want what they do for a windshield, which is shatterproof glass, which is really a sandwich. It's two form-fitting plates of glass. I don't think it's tempered, but it might be. But the key point is there's a thin layer of plastic between them. So if it smashes, it holds together. You know, so you don't get pieces of glass, whether sharp or pebbles or not, hitting you in the face to say, you know, you hit a small, like, you know, you hit a bird and it cracks the windshield. It will make a mess of it. It will become pretty much opaque. It will come into the car, but you're not going to get sprayed with a shower of glass. I'm here. Any comments?
WB2CSC.
Do you have a comment?
You must be at the repeater because I heard the volume change. Is that true?
I'm sorry, you heard what change?
The audio level change. Were you adjusting something?
No, I just opened the cabinet.
I'm home. I have to actually be back on the road in 15 minutes. WB2AD.
Take care, Ed. Thanks. We'll talk again. I was a little bit distracted because I heard the volume change. Get it, Steve.
Yeah, no, nothing there. But I do want to change things, but I got to talk to Lou, and I was looking to see if he was here, as well as on the phone. Apparently not. I'll tell you what, Andy, let me give you a telephone call. I'll be right back.
Okay, I'm here, WHCDL.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
WP2EAV listening. Mississippi Delta, WB2AV.
I knew someone was going to come up with a weird one for that. I said very, very heavy duty, but I guess yours takes the cake.
And that was a Kilo Delta 2?
That's correct.
Just a suggestion from a grizzled old timer. Don't bother with the phonetics on the repeater unless you know you're not really making it. Low band's very different story. But as a general rule, just throw it out. And if there's a problem, then you dig up the phonetics.
I had thrown it out a couple dozen times earlier to try to get to you guys on my HT, so I was a little frustrated. So when I got to the big radio, I did the whole thing. That's why that happened.
I'm sorry if you're frustrated. You were throwing out your call on this repeater? Was it in the last 15 minutes? Because I've been driving along listening. Was absolutely nothing.
When you and Andy were talking a little earlier, I think I got something wrong with the HT. I got to look at the program. So this is Jim. We've spoken before, scouting related.
Okay, Jim. I don't specifically remember, but I probably would remember if you mentioned the context of our discussion, but no big deal. No, when I was talking to Andy, we heard nobody trying to get in at all. So, yeah, I think there was something wrong and just weren't transmitting. Meanwhile, I am picking up my daughter right now. I promised I'd drive her somewhere. And sometimes she wants to talk, sometimes she just wants to look at the phone. So if I may call back. WB3EB has to run to get in the car.
So are you clearing for now, or are you going to just give me a heads up that you might?
Yeah, my daughter says she'll be staring at her cell phone and ignoring me, so we're on.
Okay, so I had a couple thoughts about the conversation last night on the TechNet. I was trying to get in then, and it was quite busy. And this morning, about both the mainly the radio, the car battery health. I had a question. I had a couple insights. But you guys were talking about glass this morning, and I wanted to remind you that a quartz halogen bulb, if it's touched with a fingerprint, the oil in the fingerprint affect the glass and make it porous to at least the halogen, if not the air, and the bulb will fail. So that's a particular instance, but glass can be porous in that particular instance anyway.
All right, interesting. Good to know that. And yeah, I know the bit about the fingerprints on those bulbs. But no, we were talking about this very vacuum, you know, low power vacuum tube specific. That was the gist of our conversation. And then it did kind of segue off the tempered glass of the life. And, I think Andy got distracted and didn't hear my brilliant answer to the differences between regular glass, tempered glass, and shatterproof glass. But I told him.
Roger, you did. And you were right on the money. The one thing you weren't sure about was the windshield. And the windshield is tempered and laminated. Laminated just like you described. But it's also tempered. And the little cubes are contained by their adhesion to the center glass when it breaks. The center plastic layer.
All right. Good to know. I wasn't sure because it basically is, you know, if you have that layer of plastic, do you really need to temper it? I would think to play safe you would, but I wasn't sure. But thank you for that. Now, that conversation last night about the car electrical system, that's something of a specialty of mine. And that was wild and woolly. And as I told Andy, the three of us were like speaking different languages with no communication whatsoever, but I'd like to hear if you have any thoughts.
I do. I'm the fourth malcontent that Andy was speaking of. I'll probably have to drop once or twice to finish the thought, and then I welcome your feedback. Historically, originally cars had generators with fixed magnet fields that they stator rotated through and made electricity. But as they started to go distances, they fried a battery. So alternators came out with field winding. So the field that the stator had to run through was electrically generated by an electromagnet. And it was controlled by a crude electromechanical voltage regulator on the firewall of the fender. Later, 60s, I suppose, they started to go to integrated voltage regulators. Since then, they've gone to computer control voltage regulation by the ECM, and the field voltage in the alternator is controlled via various circuits on the computer, and it can do all kinds of weird things. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that latest update. Over to you for now.
Okay, yeah. All right, now, I have two fairly old cars. And they have an integrated